Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Today's episode is sponsored by ByHeart, which is an infant nutrition company built from the ground up to deliver real innovation on behalf of babies and parents. Their mission is simple: make the best formula in the world. In our house, we never skim on family time together on the weekends. Instead of racing around crazy, we prioritize time at home, time to relax, time to do fun, crazy things that we wouldn't have ordinarily. And you know who else doesn't skim? ByHeart. ByHeart is the only American-made infant formula with globally sourced ingredients to use organic, grass-fed whole milk without a drop of skim. Whole milk is full of healthy fats like naturally occurring MFGM, which play an important role in babies' brain development and growth. Are you curious about ByHeart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with code name Zibby20 for a limited time. Hi, this is Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. I'm also the host of Moms Don't Have Time to Lose Weight, and I'm the editor of the anthology, which you should run out and buy, called Moms Don't Have Time To, a quarantine anthology. All proceeds of that book go to COVID-19 vaccine research. And I'm the editor-in-chief of Moms Don't Have Time to Write, a new publication on Medium, and we're accepting submissions, so please send your personal essays there. And if all that isn't enough, you can follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens, and my website is zibbyowens.com. Okay, now back to this amazing podcast. Emily Henry is the best-selling author of People We Meet on Vacation and also Beach Read. In fact, they are both on the bestseller list right now. And she's also written several other young adult novels. She lives and writes in Cincinnati and the part of Kentucky just beneath it. Her books have been featured in BuzzFeed, Oprah Magazine, Entertainment Weekly, The New York Times, The Skim, Shondaland, Betches, Bustle, and more. Hi, everybody. How are you doing? I hope everybody had a great weekend. I am really excited to be here today with Emily Henry, the best-selling author of People We Meet on Vacation. This is my book of the month copy, by the way, because yes, I am a member there too. But I am really excited to talk about People We Meet on Vacation. And I already interviewed Emily about Beach Read. So if you haven't listened to my podcast on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books with Emily for that, you can go back and do that. And now we're going to talk about her latest book. Became a bestseller. She had multiple books on the bestseller list, which is so cool. And also included me in the acknowledgments, which was so sweet. Hey, good morning. How are you? Good
morning. I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for putting me in your acknowledgments. That like made my day. I showed my kids. They were like hugging me. I don't know. They thought it was the coolest thing.
I would imagine that happens all the time because you really are sort of like the fairy godmother, I think is what I called you, or something, guardian angel, whatever, of the book world. And like, yeah, just once you've had the pleasure of doing a Zibby Owens interview, it's just like you will never forget it. And you always feel like friends. I feel like it's just, yeah, of course you were in my acknowledgments. All the design, of course.
Oh, well, thank you. It meant a lot. And I feel that same way. I feel like, yeah, not like every single person, but I would say most people, once I get to know them really well, it's hard not to want to be friends. You know, you feel like you get to know them. Yeah. And then I find myself totally rooting for everybody. You know, it's great. So,
and then everybody's rooting for you, which is just like, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. That's very sweet. So
I thought we could do like a sort of mini podcast, if you will, live about your latest book. So congratulations on People We Meet on Vacation.
Oh my God.
So much success. Are you like blown away again? I mean, you're like a superstar. This is great.
I am blown away. I have like an email chain. I have a lot of email chain publishing team, and every single time that an email comes into it, all of us are just like, okay, more great news. Like, how are we gonna keep celebrating this for this long? Because now it's been out for like 7 or 8 weeks, and it's just like, yeah, it's been 7 or 8 weeks of celebration. And you know, I don't know. It's not what I think when you're setting out to publish, it's like sort of the scenario you imagine for yourself. But then once you've done it a couple of times, you're like, oh, that doesn't happen. Like, that's the exception. That doesn't happen. Like, what? It happened like when I stopped expecting it.
Well, there you go. You know, it's like dating, right? Which is, you know, as soon as you stop looking, I feel like once I had this like year of my life where I was like really trying hard to meet someone, and I was like always getting dressed up and going out every weekend and being like, maybe he's at this party, maybe he's at that party. And then like the second I got into business school and I was like, oh great, I don't have to worry, I'll meet someone at business school. Then I like met someone the next day. So,
oh my gosh. Wow. Yeah. The next day meet is always like, I feel like that is that's what happens. That's like such a common story where you're like, immediately you just meet someone out of the gate I mean, I guess it is the same thing as publishing. It's always best to let the universe do its own thing.
Totally. Yeah. As much as control freaks like myself don't like that, but yes, it's probably true. Okay. For anyone who might not know what this book is about, would you mind giving a little synopsis of People We Meet on Vacation?
Yeah, I would love to. Okay. So People We Meet on Vacation is the story of Alex and Poppy, who are best friends. They meet in college and they don't think that they will be friends. They have nothing in common. Poppy is this wild, chaotic, kind of a little bit of a party girl, just kind of wants to meet people and see the world. And Alex is this very buttoned up academic who just kind of wants to go to school forever, which is like me kind of dividing my personality into two people. It's like, I'm both of those things. So against all odds, they form this friendship. And over the years, the way that they stay in touch as their lives carry them off in different directions is that they take a summer trip. And so the book starts 2 years after their last summer trip. So, you know, there's been this rift and they're not really speaking and you don't know exactly what happened. But Poppy is in this huge rut at work and in her personal life. And she just decides that the thing that's missing and the thing that will fix everything is having Alex back in her life. So she convinces him to take one more summer trip to see if they can fix their friendship. And yeah, so the book follows that trip in the present, but then it's also interspersed with all of their previous 10 summer trips. So you get to go back and see them getting to know each other. And I think it's a lot of fun. So if you haven't read it yet, I hope you do too.
I read it, but I hope you're talking to other people watching.
Oh, yeah, talking to other people. Yeah. I know, you're an old pro. Like, you are that's again what I'm saying. You're the best host. You can kind of tell when you show up and you're like, you haven't read my book. These questions just aren't quite right. That has not happened with you, obviously. Oh,
thanks. Well, I mean, I can't read every word of everything, but I do my best. I really do my best. But this was so great because I feel like anybody who gives up a trip to Santorini immediately should get, you know, a medal.
I totally agree. And I mean, that was really fun to write because that was basically based on my desire to go to Santorini and that I haven't been yet. I was like, I don't want to write Santorini based on Google searches. I think that will be excruciating. And so I thought that that's a way to like slip in a couple of the places that I like want to go, but not actually send them there. I have some other moments in the book where I kind of did that where it's like, these are trips I will take eventually, but I haven't. And so this way I'm not writing a book from Google, which I'm not as good at as some people are.
I have not been to Santorini either, and I would love to go there. So anyway, let me know when you're going.
Yeah, we'll go to Santorini. Santorini. I mean, now we're so close. We're so close. We can taste it to all of that international travel again.
There was like a whole feature. I don't know if you saw it in the New York Times over the weekend. And it was all about like the latest hotels to open in Mykonos. And like, I just was like holding it like, oh, this looks so beautiful. Like everyone looks more beautiful than the next.
Yeah. It's like, it really is the place in pictures that you're like, is this Photoshopped? Like every single time I see a picture of somebody in Santorini, I'm like, there's no way or anywhere in Greece, really.
Yeah, pretty much. I have been to Mykonos and it's like insanely amazing. So anyway, yeah, like dream, to go back ever. So this book was so amazing because I didn't realize as I started reading it that you were flashing back, not flashing back, but the way that you had structured the chapters was one chapter in the present, and then you were going sort of back from 10 years to until it caught up with everything. Yeah. And yeah. each one was based on a trip, which, I mean, I guess I should have researched it first, but I just looked at it anyway, whatever.
Going blind, I think.
Yeah, it's a more fun. So, but I love doing that. So you could see the progression, and then it was all sort of making sense to where you were in the present. How did you come up with that structure for this book?
Yeah, so it happened really organically. Like, I knew I wanted to play with structure. That's not something I'd actually ever done before. My books have always just kind of been very chronological, and I write and figure it out as I'm going along. But I really specifically wanted to play with structure in some way, and I didn't have any ideas for that. So my editor and I, like, kicked around a couple of different kind of ways to build a book, thinking, like, they would feed into the plot, because we just, like, did not have anything. We're just like, we don't have characters, we don't have a plot, we don't have a structure, we'll figure it out. But what ended up happening was I was trying to think of settings for the book, and I knew I wanted it to feel very summery and a little bit aspirational, and, you know, just kind of scratch all of those, like, escapist itches. And I made this list of locations that could be the setting for the book. And I realized that all of them pretty much were places that I had traveled, but not places that I had lived. And so I thought, again, kind of like knowing that there are people who are so good at research, this is no, like, shade at them. But I thought, I'm not sure I could write any of these places convincingly as a local. And so setting a book there, like, I could set a book in New Orleans, but they're basically just going to go to Bourbon Street. Like, it's not going to be... like, anyone from New Orleans is going to kind of be like, these people do not live here. They're just, like, doing things. So, I realized it was just all of these vacation destinations that I have been to. And I, at that point, just was like, oh, well, what if I just wrote from the point, from the perspective of a traveler? And then instantly the structure just completely came to me, where it was like, oh, I'll set it over the course of these vacations. And I don't really know how I... then figured out to do, like, the dual timelines with the present day storyline with the other trips kind of interspersed. I think that was just that I knew that would be easier to build tension if there was something that it was, like, building toward versus just telling it in chronological order. It's like sneaking this little mystery in, and, you know, it's like the mystery itself is not going to, like, shock anyone, blow anyone away. But I think the getting there and understanding why it was so important, why what happened really rocked their friendship and everything that led up to it. And it's not really like this one thing pulled them apart, but more of like their whole journey was kind of building and building, and then they had nowhere to go. So yeah, it's just kind of like the magic experience. Like, I don't know if you've had that magic experience when you're writing. It's like, you can just tell sometimes you're carving something from sheer rock, and then sometimes you're like, oh, and then this could happen, and that makes sense because of this. And it's like, how are these two things that are, like, the same job? How is this writing a book and this is writing a book?
Well, it's also like reading books. I mean, the experience of reading, like, the fact that they all are even, like, the same shape and words, and, you know, when they're so different, when you can open one up and, like, you know, travel around the world, or you can, you know, one minute I'm in, like, a contentious meeting with, you know, the boss of the travel blog, and the next minute I'm, like, you know, crying about, you know, I just interviewed Martha Beck this morning about, like, the sexual abuse she had as a child. I'm like, you don't know what you're going to get when you open it up. That's why when people are like reading this, reading that, I'm like, it's not even like one thing. It's like a thousand things.
That's why it also is really like traveling, because it's like, I don't know. Yeah. There's just something about story that really, it just takes you out of your own life, and it lets you briefly have this other entire life. And yes. I don't know. It's interesting that not everybody really craves that, and just like book people, and I guess like film people, whatever. Some of us just really crave that. We're like, one life is not enough. I need to see it. I need to feel everything. I need to be everyone.
I never thought of it as like one life is not enough, but that is a funny way to look at it. Yeah. I don't know. I guess you're right. I don't know. I mean, I'm satisfied with my own life, but my life is so enriched by all the characters and experiences that I don't actually live myself.
It changes you to read. And that's like a really, I don't know, it's a really beautiful experience.
And I feel like this book, I felt like it was so similar in a way to When Harry Met Sally, which is P.S. my favorite movie of all time, with sort of like the college age meetup where you think you're like never going to see this person again and you don't really like them. And then they become like one of these central characters in your life.
Yeah. That was, I mean, that was again, you know, like, I feel like every time I write a book, there's just sort of this like, almost like a Ferris wheel of things that I'm thinking about. And my brain is just sort of reaching out and grabbing them and seeing what fits together. And the When Harry Met Sally dynamic was something very early on that I knew I wanted to try. And I actually was not convinced I could do it because I hadn't written like a friendship that evolved into something more, I don't think ever really, or, you know, not over the course of years at least. And I also, you know, the thing that I love about When Harry Met Sally, which I think I said this in like the behind the book essay, whatever, but I love that every time it starts, I kind of have this thing of like, am I misremembering and I don't actually like this movie as much as I think, because Harry just drives me so like just batty in the beginning. I just think he's so obnoxious up front and I just have trouble seeing Billy Crystal become the romantic lead. And then every single time they really get me, and I fall in love with Harry again, and I watch Sally fall in love with him, and it's like so rewarding to just see these people who, it's not like the things that were annoying about them went away. It's just like they were young and they took their first impressions at face value, and getting to know someone really can change every experience you've had with them in your memory. And yeah, I wanted to create that dynamic, except I wanted Poppy to be like a little bit of the abrasive one instead of Alex. Wanted Alex to be a little bit more staid and in control and, you know, thinking about his decisions, whereas Poppy's a little bit more like,
Well, now I'm sort of annoyed because I did not know that you wrote a whole behind the book essay about it. I thought that was my own just like, you know,
well, that's a better compliment to me. That's a much better compliment to me, because I think that, you know, there's just any time you just whisper Nora Ephron's name, like within 40 minutes of me, that's a compliment. Like I just don't think anyone has, at least that I've discovered, I don't think anyone has done really what Nora Ephron could do, especially in just like 2 hours. Like how?
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
And I love how you take us to all these different places, but yet the modern day story is like not the best, right? Yeah. Like that's what my kids say. Like this was not the best when they mean something is like terrible. So yeah, like this and how many people out there have had like sort of horrific Airbnb experiences and hotel rooms that they hate and how they're like in this one bed with the back spasm and he's on the floor and you're like, oh my gosh, like because of this studio and it doesn't look like you want it, and that whole like being led astray thing, which happens to all of us, and yet like there's really not much we can do about it.
Nothing. And it is so funny because I feel like that can make or break a trip, obviously, but also who you're with matters so much, because those things can be really horrible. But when you're traveling with the right person, after even a few minutes, sometimes you're like already laughing about it, even while it's happening. You're like, this is the worst, but here we are. And someday this will be really funny. And I think, you know, when I set out to write it, like I said, I kind of had this idea that it was going to be glossy and aspirational and whatever. And then I started writing it and realized I just wanted to put that into like horrible travel nightmare scenarios. And then I realized the reason really was because when I, you know, think back on my favorite trips, there are kind of the moments with like this, you know, beautiful sheen where things just went better than you could have expected. And you wandered into a restaurant and had the best meal of your life and all of that. But then you also, alongside those, you really do remember those days that were just unbelievably bad and things went so wrong. And, you know, especially if you were with someone who you have a good time with, like maybe you were even at each other's throats in the moment, but now you laugh and joke about it. And, you know, you recall those memories every couple of years, you kind of take them out and talk about them. And the stories kind of grow and become outright lies gradually. But yeah, I like found that that was what I was excited about writing. And I realized that's, you know, kind of how we would get to know Poppy and Alex over years, was showing them in these really nice situations where they're just having a good time and things are going right. But also, how are they under duress? And, you know, what does that bring out of them? And how are they when they're in conflict?
By the way, and there was at the end, well, not to give away any ending, but there was this sort of, you know, perhaps this will become people we meet in New York, right?
Yeah.
Is that going to happen? Are you going to say?
I would. Okay. I don't know. We'll see. I love so much when people are excited enough about my characters that they would like to read a sequel. But I also really would want to make sure that I think the story would have to come to me first. I don't think that I would sit down and say, okay, I'm going to write a sequel. I'm going to figure out what they're doing in New York. I think that maybe I would have a dream or just be, you know, daydreaming and think, oh, this is what would happen next with Alex and Poppy. And then maybe I would write that. And yeah, because I think it's so tempting to just like stay in that story and to stay with those characters. But I also don't want to just kind of shoehorn them into situations that don't feel right. And I don't want to disappoint people who really, really loved them. Sometimes you read a book and characters, you know, continue and you pick up the next book and you're, or read a series, you pick up the next book and you're like, these don't even feel like the same characters. Like the author's mind kind of removed itself from that world. And then they tried to get back in. And as a reader, you're just sort of like, I don't know. Would they do that? It seems like there's like, we're missing a lot in between. So we'll see. All that to say, we'll see.
I don't know. I think there's a lot of potential that you could do there. I mean, they also don't have to like be in New York all the time. Like you could just have them based there. And, you know, as a New York mom, you could also fast forward. And
yeah, that's kind
do
of
a little New York mom scene action, which also, I don't know. I'm just saying, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that would be, that's sort of where my mind went when we were just talking, is like, I think that would be the next big hurdle for them would be like, yeah, having kids, especially having kids in the city. Like, how are you guys going to make this work? Can you do it?
Yes. Well, happy to give you any research tips you need. But gosh, that would be so fun to see Alex and Poppy as parents, I have to say. So
I love, like, this is not related to books really. Well, it is kind of, because I can't talk too much about my next book, but there's kind of a whole little section that's just sort of about like New York mom. And I don't know if it got edited out, but about the New York mom, the New York kids experience, because I briefly lived there for a residency and I was there with other people who, you know, we'd be on the train or whatever on the sidewalk and people would be like, oh, they'd see a mom with her kids and be like, I can't imagine raising kids here. And I, every time was just like, there's no better place that I can imagine like raising your kids. I would just like love seeing the kids get onto the train all in their school uniforms and going to the Met and just seeing like field trips to the Met. And yeah, there was like a whole thing in my next book where I was just sort of talking about that specific thing of the New York mom. So maybe that will happen.
Well, see, it's perfect because now you can cut it out of this book and save it for this one.
Yes.
You're already in it. Wait, you must be able to say something about the one you're working on now. It's a little bit.
I can say a tiny bit, which is that in my mind, I don't know that anybody reading this would pick up on it, but in my mind, it is my homage to You've Got Mail, which is my second favorite rom-com.
I don't know. What about Sleepless in Seattle? I mean, I feel like we could go through all the, that was one of my favorites.
Yeah. Anything with Meg Ryan, or honestly, Sandra Bullock has a couple of my favorites too. I always think about While You Were Sleeping is like probably my favorite Christmas movie. And yeah, they're all so good.
Interesting. So how deep into this next book are you?
I am so deep. I'm neck deep. I actually am about to emerge, I would say. I just turned in kind of like my final reel edit. So we'll be going to copy edits and proofreads next. And hopefully we won't notice that we did anything really, like the characters don't change their names halfway through and, you know, have totally different backstories. So yeah, I think, I mean, right now the plan is for it to come out next summer, as long as nothing weird happens. And we were on a tight deadline. My editor is coming up on maternity leave. And so we were just like, okay, we have to finish this. The baby is going to be here. So yeah, it's been, I've been just fully immersed in that book since like last fall. And I'm going to take a little time off and then I'm going to write another book.
Amazing. So is that, so are you trying to, no, that's not going to add up to one every summer, right? You're going to have to do, is it every summer?
Summer, I think, I mean, that's the goal, but we'll see, you know, life stuff can happen. And sometimes there are years where it's like, oh, I wrote four books this year. And then there are years where it was like pulling teeth to write half of one. So it all just kind of depend on what my brain does. Every fall, I kind of get this burst. And I think my agent knows to expect it now, where I send an email and I'm like, one book a year is not enough for me. I need to be doing a lot more, because I just get this burst of creative energy and become sort of manic. And I'm like, I can write three more books in, you know, before the end of the year. And then by spring every year, I'm like, oh God, I have a year off. So we'll see.
Is there anything you're going to do like creatively, essentially with the locations from this book or from I wanted to start like a Moms Don't Have Time. Well, I did start, I guess I should say. I had started this Moms Don't Have Time to Travel little community and Instagram, and I'm sort of have it on hold because like I can't do everything I want to do anymore. But I feel like there's so much potential with travel and branding that's not being done yet. And I feel like this book could sort of, I don't know, like you could send people on tours and you could organize them. Like, and also, was this a fictitious, like you could create the blog. I can't remember, what's it called? Rest and Relaxation or something.
Yeah.
Like, are you going to start something?
Oh my gosh. I hadn't gotten that far in my thoughts. I think the biggest takeaway that I had, this is such a boring adult sentence that would have meant nothing to me 10 years ago. But the farthest that I have gotten is just being like, oh yeah, I can write off my vacations. And that's about as far as I've gotten, which is like, I can travel and just choose places I want to go and go stay for a month and write a book about it. And that's kind of all I have really learned from Poppy. Learned some other things from Poppy, but from that book, I think it was just this big realization of, I do want to be, you know, seeing more and traveling more. And it's just a great excuse to do that and to research. I think when we were trying to kind of plan publicity, I do remember we talked about all these fun things of like writing some fictional blog posts. And then, of course, then I was just on deadline forever. And it's like, I am sorry. I will not be promoting this book. I hope that that's okay. And my team is incredible and they did a fantastic job. But yeah, I think maybe you just are a little bit more of a big picture thinker than I am. None of that hurts.
No, I mean, I think it would actually be really neat if you almost crowdsourced it, right? So you didn't have to do it all yourself, but all your fans, right? You have like 8 million fans. Or I just made that up. You have a zillion fans for this book now who are really passionate about it and who travel a lot, and travel is coming back. So you could do this blog and have everybody like, I don't know, you could have everybody do a little write-up of it, and then it becomes like I don't know. Anyway, whatever. You have enough on your plate. But
no, I love that. I mean, and the idea too of somebody telling you what to read in a certain location would be really fun too. Being like, go here and read this book while you're there. Like,
yep.
That's somebody's planning your trip for you. And that sounds great.
That's true. I should do an article of what to read in different places, actually.
Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe I'll do that later today.
Yeah. Tell me what to read in Mykonos. That's what we'll do.
I could tell you what I read when I was in Mykonos, but that was like, what did I read? That was a couple, was it 2 years ago or 3 years ago that I went there? But I took pictures of like my huge stack of books that I brought. I'm going to have to remember. But that was just like, read every book. That's fun. But I always have like 8 books I'm reading a week. So
right.
You know, it's whatever happened then. Awesome. So where do you write? Where is your go-to spot? What's your process like? Do you write all day? Like, tell me how you're managing this.
Yeah. When I'm drafting, I think like I'm giving myself a million kinds of arthritis and carpal tunnel, because I draft usually like lying flat on the couch with my head kind of like crooked up and my laptop on my tummy. And yeah, every time my husband walks through, he's like, are you okay? What is this? And I'll move around throughout the day. I've got kind of, you know, like an elevated desk that I'll use. And I just kind of move around whenever I get stuck, because I think, I don't know if you've found this with your writing too, but I feel like sometimes a change in location will just jog something loose. So yeah, when I'm drafting, I like to wake up and not do anything before I write, if possible, because as soon as I start answering emails or doing phone calls or whatever, it just uses a little bit of my willpower, I think. And I have a daily word goal of 2,000 words. And I write until I get that. Sometimes if it's going really well, I might write twice as much. Sometimes I might, you know, be like 100 words under. And the other thing is, like, sometimes that takes me an hour and a half. And sometimes it takes me 9 hours, depending on what my headspace is and what I have figured out so far. And I'm so, so, so lucky to be able to do it, to work that way, and to be able to have this be my full-time job. But it is kind of funny, because I used to have a different full-time job, and I kind of feel like, do I get any more done than I did when I had a full-time job? I'm definitely happier, but do I get any more done? Because yeah, I think, you know, it's, I don't really know. It's just the way that I have figured out works for me is having that word goal and not letting myself off the hook. And again, like, if it's going really well, I could be done with that in an hour and a half and have a full day ahead of me. And when that happens, I actually tend to burn myself out on accident, because I think, well, it's only been an hour and a half, you know, might as well keep working until 5 p.m. And then by the next day, I'm just like a desiccated sponge. But yeah, I mean, there are times, the best feeling in the world for me is when I do want to write for a full day. And it doesn't happen all that often that I just feel like I watch the sun go down in the sky and realize I haven't gotten up to turn on, you know, the lights in my office or whatever. But it's the best feeling, I think, when you just kind of get lost.
That's awesome. And you've been like such a great, you know, literary citizen, as Courtney Mom calls it. But I feel like you've been posting a lot more about different books that you've loved reading. Yeah. What have you read lately that you want to shout out about? Anything?
You get so daunted when people ask you this, because
I know it's like, the worst question, because yeah. I usually just pick what's ever on my desk right then. So
that's basically what I typically do, which I am in a hotel room right now. But one that I have right in front of me that I'm reading currently is On a Night Like This by Lindsay Kelk. And it's sort of women's fiction, sort of a rom-com. And I just love, there's like a very particular like subgenre, I feel like, of British women's fiction writers that are just like my happiest place to be. And I don't know like what unites them and makes it feel different than like an American women's fiction writer. I guess maybe some of just like the slang and whatever, but there's this like kind of jouncy feeling. I think about, yeah, Lindsay Kelk is one of the ones that comes to mind, and Bari McFarlane and Paige Toon. I don't know, just a few people who really just like make me happy. I also just read a few weeks ago The Other Black Girl, which I thought was really good, really gripping. I also am a Book of the Month subscriber, and I think one of my favorite things about them is that they always pick things that are paced really well.
Mm-hmm, and I that's feel true. Like,
you pick almost anything you choose for the month, if you open it, you're going to finish it within the next couple of days. And yeah. So that is kind of how I do a lot of narrowing the field. I read Laura Dave's The Guest List, and I loved that. I thought that was really fantastic. And I'm not like a big thriller mystery reader, but I loved that. And coming out soon, Suzanne Park's So We Meet Again, which is her, mm-hmm. I think it's her sophomore adult women's fiction rom-com. And it's about a woman who leaves her Wall Street job and moves back to her like Nashville, like Korean church community with her parents, and kind of has to figure out what she's doing next if she's not going to be a banker. And it's just, it'll make you very hungry, but it's also just like warm and nice. And there's like, I don't know, it's just, it's very, very fun. And I think that comes out in August. So we're very close to that.
Perfect. So you did it. Excellent job.
I did it.
So last question today, any advice for aspiring authors?
Yeah. I mean, I can't remember now. So this might be the same thing I said when we did your podcast last year, but I think there are a couple things that I think are really important. One, if you haven't been able to finish a book and you want to be writing books, then I would say finish it no matter how bad it is. And that's, you know, how I use that word goal as like my motivation, because you know, I'll write 2,000 words every day, and then I'll have to cut 15,000 words of that later because nothing even happened. But I sat down and I committed myself to the time, and I gave myself the space to figure it out. So I think finishing things, if you haven't finished a book, you are capable, and just let it be bad, and that's okay, and you can fix it all later. But make yourself finish it, no matter how horrible, because it will just feel really good. And the other thing, I think it's like really important to write the thing that you really do want to read. And everybody says that, but I think that sometimes people get in their heads trying to figure out what the market wants or what worked for other authors and, you know, what makes a successful book. And when I wrote Beach Read, you know, I didn't think anybody would ever be reading that. And even when we went to sell it, we were like, okay, so it's a rom-com, but also like there's a, you know, a grieving girl whose father has died and, you know, like they're researching a cult where everyone died in a fire. And we didn't really know, or I didn't really ever think that anyone else would want that book. I just knew I wanted it. And, you know, sometimes you write the book you wanted and it sells 1,000 copies and then you get the email that they're pulping it, which has also happened with one of my books. And then sometimes you write the book you want and it's a New York Times bestseller, but you just don't have control over anything but the work. And so you should always make what you actually want to make, because you cannot anticipate the market. You cannot control anything other than what you write.
Awesome. Excellent advice. Very wise.
Thank you.
Great. Well, Emily, congratulations. Keep writing. You know, this whole Instagram Live, people have been like, I love you. This is the best book ever. So just keep it up. This is fantastic. You got a good thing going here. Keep it up.
Thanks so much for having me, Zibby. And someday we will do this in person. I feel sure.
Yeah, me too. Crazy. All right. Okay. Have fun on your trip and keep expensing your vacation.
Oh,
we'll see where you go.
Thanks everyone for showing up.
Bye. Yeah. Thank you everybody. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.